Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Mem Bet Amud Bet, six lines up. Gemara begins, Mistamech Vazil, Rabbi Bo'u Katvei, de Rabbi Nachum Shamei. So Rabbi Bo'u was going along on the shoulders of Rabbi Nachum Shamei, his servant or his Shamesh, Sharet, who took care of him. Now, a Katvei doesn't necessarily mean that he was riding on his shoulders necessarily, but could be the equivalent of some sort of rickshaw that they had, that they carried him on the shoulders. Mankit va'azil hilchot aminei. While he's doing that, he said, I may as well benefit from this while I'm going along here. He sat there and he collected halachot from him. He went through different things. He just asked him halachot psukot. It says, ba'aminei, machloket v'achakach stam. You have a mishnah which contains a machloket, and then afterwards there's a stam mishnah. My, what's the din in that case? Amalei halacha kistam. In that instance, the halacha is kistam mishnah. Because first you had the machloket, then you have the stam. That means Rabbi brought you the machloket. And the fact that he was so tame, achakach, indicates that that's the way that he felt, that he wanted to go. On the other hand, stam v'achakach machloket, you have a stam mishnah and then a machloket afterwards, mai, what's the din? Amalei, ain't aloha kistam. Then aloha is not like the stam mishnah. The fact that Rabbi, after bringing a stam mishnah, brings you a machloket, he wants to show you that that stam mishnah we brought before was not a halacha psuka, but really, it's something that needs to be discussed because there's multiple opinions over here. Stama domatnitin machloket bebraita. If you have a stam mishnah, but in a braita, we have information that this is really a machloket. Mai, what's it in there? Malay halacha kistam. Over there, the mishnah trumps the braita, and therefore, we can say halacha kistam mishnah. Machloket bematnita ustama debraita. If you have a machloket in the Mishnayot and a stam braita, my, what's the din? Amalei, v'chi rabbi lo shana, rabbi chia minayin lo. So here, this is a statement that the Gemara brings in many places, which is rabbi chia and rabbi shayu, who were the misadrei ha-braitot, are talmidim of rabbi. And rabbi is the misadrei ha-mishnah. So where did rabbi chia get something unless he heard it from rabbi? So if you have here a mishnah that has a machloket, and then all of a sudden Rabbi Chia brings down a braita that is a stam braita, how would he know to paskin like one of the two deot unless he heard from Rabbi? And the fact that Rabbi in the Mishnah made it a machloket means he didn't hear that from Rabbi. If that's the case, then the braita, the stam braita, has no weight here because we assume that there's something wrong with that stam braita if the fact that Rabbi already put it as a machloket. Now, it's interesting from a number of points here, which is that only Rabbi is granted this authority, unusual authority, that when he was Masada the Mishnah, if he decided to make a Mishnah a Stam Mishnah, why does he make it a Stam Mishnah? Why does he hide the attribution of an opinion? Because he wants that opinion to take on more power than it really is. Many times it's a Dat Yachid, or it's Yachid versus Rabim. He makes it as if it's a Rabim by not giving attribution. But Rabbi is the only one invested with that power. Rabbi Chia, Rabbi Hoshaya, and the Braito don't have that power. They're all subject to Rabbi. They're only Talmidim of Rabbi. And therefore, if Rabbi didn't do it, they don't have the ability to say anything or change anything that Rabbi did. They can only bolster or give us information about what Rabbi did, but they cannot then change the Psak Halacha from being Machloket in the Mishnayot to a Stam Mishnah in the Braita. So that's very interesting dynamic there, first of all, by Rabbi. Number two is that the order of Mishnayot matters. And that's also interesting because we know that Rabbi was Mesader the Mishnayot. It's not clear that he was Mesader the Mishnayot in necessarily the order that we have them in. The Rambam and his Hagdama the Perish of Mishnayot assumes that that is the case. And Rabbi put them in these order. But we find in the Gemara sometimes that the Gemara says, well, this was learned first, that was learned later. It's not so clear about the sequential order of Mishnayot. Many of the Rishonim believe that within a single Mesechta, you can believe that the Mishnayot are ordered in order, but between Mesechtot, it's not so clear that you could say this was learned first, this was learned second. Rabbi is being Mesader Mishnayot. Does that really mean that they were learned in that order? Is he taking Mishnayot and he's just placing them together? Who says that he put the Mishnayot together, starting in Brachot going forward? But here the Gemara sees, because if you have Halacha Kistam Mishnah, when it's after Machloket, and Machloket after Stam, the Gemara sees it as being meaningful, the order of the Mishnayot, not just the fact that you have a Mishnah that's a Stam Mishnah, but its placement vis-a-vis a Machloket also has meaning. And so that's important also, how far that's taken. And again, the Rishonim argue about how much order matters here, whether it's only within a mesechta, or is it even outside of a mesechta? Do we say that order matters in these situations? There are other klalei apsak that sometimes override these. For instance, many times with the Gemara, what the Gemara calls ikraro shel davar. If you find this mishnah that's found, two stam mishnayot, and one of them is just a sidebar in that situation, the other one is where the major points are made, or this topic is discussed, we might give more weight to the stam mishnah where the topic is discussed, as well as if you find a mishnah that has halachot psukot in it, a list of a number of halachot that we consider to be halachot psukot, that'll carry more weight than just the mishnah in other places. So there are other factors that we would consider, but here are general principles that are being laid out about a stam mishnah. So now he challenges him and he says, Amrlei v'hatnan, don't we have a mishnah which is a stam mishnah in which we do not paskin like the stam mishnah, which is masreik shel pishtan. You have a comb for flax, for linen comb, shenitnu shinav. Its teeth were broken out. It's a comb that has teeth, and the teeth are either snapped off, broke off. V'nishtaru bo shtayim. If there are two teeth that remain, then tmeyot. The item remains tamei, meaning it's still functional. Since it's still functional, therefore it is tamei. V'achat. If it only has one tooth remaining, then tehura, because it's no longer functional. V'kulan shenitlu achat achat bifnei atzman. Each tooth that is taken off, they are tmeyot. Meaning each tooth by itself is a functional kli once it's taken off. You can use it to, there a day you can write on a pinkas. You could use it to scratch on a wax ledger that you could write on with these pins. And they happen to be that they are thicker pins because of the pishtan. Therefore, you don't have to do anything. By definition, they're going to be functional because they have value. And we're going to see later on, there are other things that you could do with these teeth. But here, the Mishnah does not require any preparation. By definition, they are good as a kli. Shel tzemer. And then we're talking about a comb for wool. Shenitlu shinav achat bibentayim. If every other tooth is removed by a wool comb, tahor, then it's tahor. The wool comb is a much finer comb than the pishtan or the linen comb. So therefore, if it's missing every other tooth, it's no longer really functional because it needs to be a much finer comb. If you're going to separate the wool and you're going to take it apart and separate the strands, you need something that is a thinner tooth comb. You can't have this where every other tooth is missing. Nishtaru bo gimel b'makom echad. If you have three that are adjacent to each other, then tamei, then it's sufficient because three together already gives you a narrow enough scope that you can use that to comb with. Hayta achitzona achat mehen. If one of the outer ones is one of those teeth, tahor, then it is tahor. What this means in terms of the outer one sounds like that if you think about a comb today, a hair comb, you have the teeth in the middle, which are thinner teeth, and then you have the edge of the comb, which is also the end of the comb, plus it's a thicker tooth. So that's the same thing over here. The end tooth is thicker, so it doesn't function like a comb tooth. So therefore, if you have three at the edge, then it doesn't help you because you don't have three thin teeth in the comb. Nitnu bet vasan lemlaket. If two teeth were broken off of the comb here, so again, remember, these are thinner teeth, then if you made it into a pincer, a tweezer, tmeyot, because now you made them functional after they were out. Achat, if one of them comes away, vitkina, again here, he prepares it, he makes it functional, liner, for a ner. Now, I would have thought, you know, in our day we think of a ner, you would think of a wax candle, you have a tooth that you can stick the candle on that would hold it up. That's one possibility, but in their day, a ner is not the candle itself, it is the cup that holds the oil. So the pin there was to punch the hole in the ner to make it so that it had a place for the ptilah. That's why you could think of other reasons why they would use a pin like this. Odemituach, or if it's for stretching things out, here you could have one of two interpretations. It could be a peg. So for instance, if you're working on a beged and you want to peg the edges of the beged to stretch it out or hold it out, use these pins to hold it out, to peg it out. That's one. Odemituach. We have another instance is where you want to separate strings. In the beged, you use a thin needle to separate out the strings. But either way, there it's tmeyah. So here, the difference between the ratio and the seifa of this mishnah is, the ratio is pishtan, where you have thicker teeth to the comb. So that has impact, first of all, on the fact that as long as you have a certain amount of teeth remaining, we're okay. because you don't need a fine tooth comb, you need a thicker comb. So there, as long as you have two remaining, you're good. Number two is the teeth themselves need no preparation to be classified as kelim, because they're already bigger teeth beforehand, and the assumption is that they're functional from the moment they fall off the comb. On the other hand, the second half of the Mishnah is talking about semer, it's talking about wool. In wool, you need a finer tooth comb, therefore you require three teeth. In addition to that, you require a hatkana. If the tooth falls off, then you need to designate it for something that is functional for it to be tmeah. But without that, it would be tehora. It's not automatically functional when it falls off the comb. V'kaimelon, dein alocha koto mishnah. And we paskin alocha not like that mishnah. So here you have a stam mishnah, and yet we're not paskin alocha like that stam mishnah. So now Mar says, amalei bar mina dahai, excluding that mishnah. That mishnah is an exception to the rule. Dahai, the Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish, damrei tarvayu zo eino mishnah. Because they say that this mishnah is questionable in its authenticity. Or there's a problem with this mishnah, and therefore we're not going to pass him like the mishnah. Yes, it's a stam mishnah, but it is questionable in its veracity. My time. An Rabuna bar Manoach mishmed ravidi braid ravika mishum de kasha reisu the seifa. There's a stira between the two sides of the mishnah. The tani shelzemer nitnu shinav achat bin mitayim tahor. That if every other tooth is missing on a wool comb, then it is tahor. Ha nishtaru boshtayim b'makom echad tamei. From the implications from that, or if you have two together, then it would be tamei. It would still be functional. Vadar tani. Then it says afterwards nishtaru bo gimel tamei. Only if it has three teeth adjacent, then it would be tamei. Gimel in shtayim lo. Three yes, two no. Where it says umay kushya. It's an interesting question from the Gemara. We have tons of Mishnayot throughout Shas that have exactly this problem, where you medayik from one side of the Mishnah gives you information, the other side gives you this information, and the Gemara has to deal with it. In many places, we see the Gemara dealing with this problem of diukim out of the Mishnah, and that doesn't make it that the Mishnah is not a good Mishnah. Number two is, if you think about the scenario, in the scenario here, we said you took out every other tooth, or every other tooth had fallen out. Well, in that case, if you think about it, what they're saying is if anyone remained in between, it would be a kli. Anyone remaining in between automatically means you have three teeth in a row. So the diuk itself to me is somewhat questionable. The Gemara comes up with a different answer to the question, but the question itself seems somewhat strained, which is, lokasha, dilmaha begavaita, vaha bivraita. That depends where you have these successive teeth. Is it on the inside or on the outside? Rashi brings two interpretations as to what inside and outside mean. You can think about on a comb, inside and outside. Inside could be the middle teeth, outside could be the outer teeth. Or inside and outside are, if you have multiple rows of teeth, then inside and outside would be the different rows of teeth. So that's it. Rashi first brings the interpretation that we're talking about inside and outside. So that's what he says. When iktani shtayim tamei b'gviato. Talk about two that are tamei, that's in the center of the comb. Because over there, they are more functional. Because if you think about a comb that has a handle on it, comb that has a handle in the center that you grasp it with, then if the teeth are in the center, you have more leverage with those teeth because it's in the center. But if the teeth are towards the edge and you're holding it in the middle, it's much harder to use those teeth, meaning that they're going to pull away from you because there's too much torque on the teeth based on where you're holding it. So it's going to be much harder to use. So that's the difference between Mikviato Braito. That's the first way Rashi brings it. And then the end, he brings Lishna Achrino Behu Ikar. He says, I'm bringing another Lashon. He thinks this is the right way to explain it. But Gavaita Braito is that there are two rows of teeth over here. The Masrek Shel Tzemer, the wool comb, has these two rows to it. Chitzonot Upnimiyot. And the Chitzonot do the major work. The outer ones do the major work. Tzeluyav Hen Upnimiyot Leklota Tzemer Shelo Yipol. And the inner ones are just there to hold on to it so it doesn't fall down. Therefore, in the chitzonot, you need three to be functional because that's doing the major work. And on the inner ones, you only need two because that's just there to grab onto the wool, to hold on to it. It's not there to actually do the work, and therefore it's sufficient with two. All right, so now we answer that question. That's certainly not what made this Mishnah into a problematic Mishnah. Alami Ocha, must be this, Diktani. In the ratio of the Mishnah, it says that if you take one away, this is the pishtan comb, that each one of them is automatically tamei when it comes away from the comb. In the sefer, when you're talking about the wool comb, it says that only if you prepared it, if you made it into a functional kli, does it mekabel mutuma? So there, hitkina lener ol mituach tmeya. Hitkina yen lo hitkina lo. I'm Rabbi, my kushya. Dilma ha bikatayu, ha delo bikatayu. So here the distinction that is drawn is different than what the Mefarshim and the Mishnayot say in Kelim. Over here, the Gemara draws a distinction between the handle. That if you have a handle on it versus if you don't have a handle on it. So if you have a handle on it, it's automatically functional because the handle itself with the pin makes it functional because you can use it right away. On the other hand, if it has no handle on it or has no piece of wood to hold it with, then you have to fix it because all you have is a sharp pin here. You don't have a handle on the pin. Amar Rav Papa, umai kushya, dilma ha bikatinta, ha balimto. This is what we spoke about before. It doesn't have to do with the Beit Yad. It has to do with the thickness of the tooth of the comb. So bikatinta, meaning the smaller one or the narrower one, the thinner one, there you require a certain amount of preparation. That would be the wool comb, which uses a finer tooth comb. So the finer teeth require some sort of preparation. Alimta, the bigger ones, the thicker ones that work with the pishtan, those don't need any other preparation or to be mekabel tuma. Ela, mishum de misayme ba.
Davkane, those that are more scrupulous in attention to detail.
So this reason that it is problematic is because we have those that finish with zu divrei Rabbi Shimon. So that's why we have a problem here. It's because this Mishnah is not a Stam Mishnah that we have in other places. And that Mishnah as zu divrei Rabbi Shimon. That this is as attribution to Rabbi Shimon. If that's the case, it's no longer a Stam Mishnah. So your question doesn't get off the ground because this is not a Mishnah. Now, that means that when Rabbi Yochanan Shlach says, Eino Mishnah, that means that maybe not necessarily that it's not a Mishnah, but it's a Mishnah that has attribution to a Dat Yachid. It's not a Mishnah that's classified as a Stam Mishnah. It doesn't carry the weight of a Stam Mishnah. Okay, Shlalach, Rabbi Chia Bar Abin. Now we're going back to our Mishnah. And our Mishnah, we discussed the fact that you have to wait 3 months. How do you count the 3 months? Or when are the 3 months? When is it triggered? And when is it over? So now we have Shlalach, Rabbi Chia Bar Abin, Ma'arsin Toch Gimel. You're allowed to have a Rusin within the 3 month window. B'cheno si ma'aseh. It's not only is that the case that I'm saying this, but I see a loch of the maisa like this. I've seen the chachamim take a psak like this. That's three. V'chein ha'yer belozer melamdenu mishum Rabbi Chanina agadol rubo shel rishon v'rubo shel shlishi v'emtzayi. It's the majority of the first month, the majority of the last month, and the entire middle month. So 3 months here doesn't literally mean out to the 90-day mark. It means 15 plus on the first month, 15 plus on the last month, and then you have a full 30 days in the middle. So you have a minimum of 60, but 60 plus days over here. So Ameimar, surely Aris, Biyom Tishim. He used to allow them to get engaged, halachically engaged, on the 90th day. Amalei Ravashi, Lameimar, Rabbi Shmuel, Damrei Tavayu, Tzrich Lam Tim Gimel Chodoshim. She has to wait 3 months. Chutz Miyom Shemit Bo, exception of the day that her husband passed away. And excluding the day that she gets engaged on. I mean, the 90 days have to be between the time that her husband passed away and the time that she gets engaged. She needs a full 90 days after the day after the death of her husband to the day before she gets engaged. So how are you saying here that she's allowed to get engaged or mitares on the 90th day? It says, how linyan meneket itmar. That is about a meneket. That has to do with a nursing mother. There, that's what we talk. They have to wait 24 months. 20 more months is the standard weaning period for a child. So in the case of Meineket, if you remember, the problem is that we're afraid she's going to become pregnant. And by becoming pregnant, that's going to dry up her milk supply. And by doing so, then it will hurt the baby's chance for survival over here. So based on that, we say she shouldn't get married within that 24-month period after she's given birth. So those 24 months, that's where it was said. Chutz miyom shenolad bo, the exclusion of the day of birth, v'chutz miyom shenitar sabo, excluding the day that she gets engaged. She needs a full 24 months between the birth and the engagement. V'ha ha'ud avad sudate rusim biyom tish'im, v'af sedei rovo de sudate. You're telling me this is only said about a meneket, and I'm telling you that I thought I heard Rav and Shmuel say this about any instance where you have to wait the 90 days, or you have a window of time you have to wait that excludes the day of the event and the day of your erusin. And he says, I'll show you, I have a loch lemaisa that a case by Rova, that an individual made a suda derusim on the 90th day, va'afsadei rova l'sudate, and Rav told him to throw it all out. He says, how sudat nisuin havai? Wait a minute, now you're mixing things up. By sudat nisuin, nobody permits nisuin during that period of time. Erusin is different. Erusin is not a problem because you don't have the problem of havchana anymore. You don't have the problem of distinguishing between the first child from the first husband and the second husband. That requires, I agree with you, a full 90 and everything like that. But Erusin is different. Erusin is only Gzeira Otu. And since Erusin is only Gzeira Otu, we're not going to be as makpi. There has to be a full 90-day window. I mean, we had different opinions here as how makel we are, whether you need only rova the first month, rova the last month, middle month, or you also need full 90 days, but you can on that last day have Erusin. But at least there's some sort of kulot because it's Erusin. But in a case where it's Nisuin, we can't be makel over here because you need the full 90-day window. Behilchata. And here is the halacha. The Gemara brings the psalacha. Tzricha lamtin kaftal el chodesh. A meneket has to wait 24 months. Chutz miyom shenolad bo. The exclusion of the day that the baby is born. Chutz miyom shenitarsa bo. And excluding the day that she gets engaged. You need a full 24 months between those two events. And also here, v'tzricha lamtina gimel chodoshim. Chutz miyom shemeit bo. Chutz miyom shenitarsa bo. Again, like the pashtut of what Rav and Shmuel said, the 90-day window is 90 days between the day that her husband died and the day that she gets engaged. You need a full count of 90 days between those two events. Neither of those days counts towards her 90 days. Right now, we go back to the Mishnah of Chutz Min Almana. If you remember, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi says that everybody can get engaged except for an Almana, Mipnei Aibul, because she has Avelut. So we discussed over there, there's Machloket Rishonim as to what exactly Rabbi Yossi is saying. We're going to go with Rashi's interpretation through today's Gemara that Rabbi Yossi agrees in principle with Rabbi Huda. That means that those that were Nisuin, those that were fully married, can get engaged, can have Erusin. And those that had Erusin can then get fully married. Because those that have Erusin are certainly not pregnant. So the only reason you would over here say there's a problem is the Gzeira Otu. So Rabbi Yehuda said there is no Gzeira by Erusin. If someone only had Erusin and then she lost her husband for whatever reason, divorce or widowed, then she can go ahead and get married immediately because there's no chance of pregnancy except with the exception of Yehuda in the Ezor of Yehuda where they have problems of Libo Gaspa. And the other way around, if you have an Nisuah, then you can have Erusin because Erusin is not problematic. You just have to wait until the 90 days elapse to have the Nisuin. That's Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. Rabbi Yossi came along and said, well, by the Almana, you have to wait because of a Yibul. So Rashi said over there, the only thing he is saying is that an Almana min a Nisuin cannot get engaged during that window or period because she is Avel. She's an Avela. So since she's an Avela, we don't let anything go through during that window of 30 days. After that, she can do it. But otherwise, he agrees entirely with Rabbi Yehuda Shita, and that is that the Nisuot can have Erusin and the Arusot can have Nisuin. That's Rashi's interpretation. We spoke about the other Rishonim here. Now comes Amar Rav Chisda. Kal v'chomer says about this Shita of Rabbi Yossi, it's a Kal v'chomer. In a place where one is not allowed to launder because of a velut, mutar le'ares, you're still allowed to have erusin. Makom shemutar le'chabes, in a time where it's mutar to launder, enudin shemutar le'ares, certainly it should be mutar li'ares. Our assumption here is that the Isser of Kibbutz does not last the entire 30 days of Avelut. That the Isser Kibbutz is only for the 7 days of Shiva. We actually discussed this very extensively in the Gemara in Moed Katan, because over there the Gemara differentiates between Kibbutz and Gehutz, which is Kibbutz is laundering. That was only restricted according to the Tosfot, the Balei Tosfot, and they discuss it here again, for the 7 days of Avelut. After that point, the gihutz, only gihutz, which is more like a dry cleaning or pressing, was restricted for the entire 30 days. But that means kibbutz is allowed after 7 days. It's just the gihutz. And then the Gemara there says that our gihutz shelano is not really up to par. So since our gihutz is not up to par, then we wouldn't restrict anything. According to the Balei Tosfos, there's no Isser kibbutz after the 7 days of Avelut because kibbutz goes away. And gihutz, we don't have the secrets to gihutz anymore. And therefore, nothing applies after that period of time. There, the Tosafot goes back and forth, trying to establish whether Gihutz and Kibbutz are, first of all, synonymous. Maybe they're the same thing. How differentiated they are. And then what's the impact today in Avelut? And again, obviously, Tosafot here, just in summary, says that Gihutz and Kibbutz are separate. And therefore, Achar Shiva, B'toch Lamed, it's Mutar L'Chabes. He says that the restriction against the 30 days is dafka gehutz asur toch 30 yom. Umiu gehutz didan shari. But our gehutz doesn't live up to that standard of gehutz, and therefore it would be mutar the gamre. So Tosafot brings a summary of his shita over here. There's much more extensive Tosafot in Moed Katan that goes through this in great detail. But there we have asur lechabez, and then mutar liares. And we have a situation here which is mutar lechabez, and asur liares. Doesn't make any sense. So we're going to bring the paradigm in a second. But here we're dealing with avelut. And avelut only has an isur kibbutz for 7 days. After that, there's a heter of kibbutz. So you have a heter of kibbutz, we'd assume, of course, you would have a heter of erusin, because in places where we have isur kibbutz, we allow erusin. And certainly where there's no isur kibbutz, we allow it. But the Gemara is using as a paradigm is the Mishnah from Tanit, which deals with Tisha B'Av, which is Ditnan. Shabbat Shechal Tisha B'Av B'Tucha, the week on which Tisha B'Av falls out. Asur L'Saper U'L'Chabes. One may not get their haircut, and one may not launder. So Medina de Gemara, they're only Shvoi Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, the week in which Tisha B'Av falls out. Are there any restrictions? And the restrictions are against L'Saper, is to get a haircut, U'L'Chabes, to launder. Then the minhag was to extend it to the 9 days. And then certain aspects of this were extended even to the 3 weeks period of time. So there we have extended things. But Medina de Gemara, the Gemara says it's only the Shvoi Shechalbo, and that's the Saper Lechabes. Umukamishi, again, another din that we don't follow today. But on Thursday, if a Tisha B'Av itself falls out on a Thursday, Mutar Mipnei Kvod HaShabbat, for Kovar HaShabbat, even on Tisha B'Av itself, you could wander, and you could get a haircut. Today, when it falls out on Thursday, we do it on Friday. But in their day, they all their preparations on Thursday, getting a haircut or laundering were significant undertakings. And therefore, even when it falls out on Chamishi b'Shabbat, we allow one to prepare for Shabbat. V'tanya, kodem azman hazeh, before this time period, so here comes in the 9 days period, which is, for this period, ha'am me'ma'atim bi'itzkehem, the people diminish their interactions, their engagements, milisam litain, to do business, to transact, milibnot ulintoa, to build or to plant, uma'arsin, but we do have erusin. Erusin is permitted during this period of time, avalokonsin, but we don't allow nisuin during this period of time, ve'enosim sudat erusin, and even when we permit erusin, we don't allow you to have the engagement party, a bort, or something like that, to celebrate the erusin. So here, this is going back to Kodem. Kodem sounds like, and by the way, the Gemara is not going to interpret this way, Kodem would be Yev Shvu Shechalbo. Kodem as Manazeh, you would have implied that it's before Shvu Shechalbo, but after Rosh Chodesh. But the Gemara is going to say Kodem as Manazeh, the Gemara is going to assume, means Kodem Tisha B'Av. Before Tisha B'Av. So what does that mean? In Shvu Shechalbo. That's the way the Gemara is going to learn it in this case. The Gemara then answers, Kitanya Ohi. That is said about Kodem to Kodem. Before the before. So the before is Shvu Shechalbo, and before that is up until Rosh Chodesh. So here you have restrictions that started Rosh Chodesh. Now we have the Mishnah as well, which is Mishnah Nichnasav Mematim B'Simcha. So this is a definition of what Mishnah Nichnasav Mematim B'Simcha means. Over here, Tosafot discusses again things that are discussed there in the Gemara and Tanit. One of which is the Gemara there says that the Isur B'niyah and the Isur Nitiyah only relate to B'niyah Shel Simcha and Nitiyah Shel Simcha. Those are only things that are done for happiness, simcha, extraneous needs. But if they are core needs of the individual, or they are to fix something that is broken, over there we don't have restrictions against B'niyah and Nitiyah. These are all about B'niyot that are done for pleasure, whether it's a extra summer home, it's a gazebo in the backyard, or they talk about the trees that they used to plant for shade and things like that. Those are plantings of simcha. Those are restricted. Tosafot over here discusses whether lisav litain, business transactions are allowed. If core business transactions are allowed, and therefore the restriction is the same as netiyah and biniyah, which is only for simcha, or is all business? Do you have to diminish all business? And here Tosafot concludes, vein nira delo asar lesudat ma. Nira deribo imasa matan ka asar. Shimatu yoter mi bishar yamim. Says over here, he believes that it really means over here that you have to diminish your normal transactions, your normal business conduct, not that simchas out and core transactions are allowed, he says that it's not allowed at all. I mean, you have to diminish business across the board, irrespective of what it's for. Now, business for simcha might be you're doing things, purchasing things for a chatan and a kala, doing it for something that would be a happy occasion rather than core types of business transactions or transactions that you would do to buy food, to supplies, and certain things like that. So now you see here that with regards to Tisha B'Av, where we have an Isur Kibbutz, and we have a Heter Eirusin. Now, the Gemara says, don't question from that, because the Isur Kibbutz is only on Shavuot Shechalbu Tisha B'Av. The Heter Eirusin is before that, which is in the period of time from Rosh Chodesh until Shavuot Shechalbu. Where it says, Amarova, V'kodim, D'kodim, Nami Kal V'chomer. Even if you set it up from Rosh Chodesh, it's also V'kal V'chomer. Mamakom Shasur Lisav L'Tein. In a case where we have to diminish business transactions, mutar le'ares. So from Rosh Chodesh already mematim b'simcha and we mema'id be'esek. There we say it's still mutar for every sin. Makom shemutar li'sav li'tein, inu din shemutar le'ares. In a place, again, by a velut, where business transactions are not restricted, isn't it mutar le'ares? Again, there it's questionable about what is the restriction on business transactions during Shiva. There is a machloket in the Rishonim, how much is blocked off, and whether it's only by a parent that we say that you may not work at all, but by other relatives you could if it's necessary, or is it by parents where it's necessary you can work, and by other relatives you can work without any problem. We saw these different possibilities in the Gemara Moed Katan as to was there a differentiation between parents and other relatives regards business transactions, but clearly, once you pass the Shiva in the 30-day mark, there's no restriction against business transactions. And over there, we say, Asur le'ares. He wants you to wait the 30-day period. Over here, by Tisha B'Av, we're saying that, Mirosh Chodesh, you have to diminish business. And yet, Mutar le'ares. So if it's a Kav, it should be the same Kav B'Chomer again. So Gemara says, Lo Teima de Rabbi Yossi Omer. So now the Gemara starts to amend the statement of Rabbi Yossi. So don't say that he says, Kol Anashim Yit Arsu, that all women can become engaged. Ela ema, kol anashim yinasu. All women can actually get married and consummate their marriage. Ve'leilei l'Rabbi Yossi l'havchin. And Rabbi Yossi does not have this issue of havchana, which is interesting in itself, that he doesn't have this din of worrying about the babies from the two different parties, which is an interesting position in of itself, because why not? Why doesn't he have to worry about it? But here Rashi then explains, now we have a three machloket in the Mishnah at this point in time, because you have Rabbi Yehuda, who Rashi thought before was the same as Rabbi Yossi, with the exception of Almanah. Now all of a sudden we have totally different din. We have the Tana Kama, who says everything's Asur. Erusin and Nisuin are Asur, and everything's Atu. You can't do Erusin, Atu, Nisuin, and Arusot can't do anything, Atu, Nisuot. That'd be the Tana Kama's position. Along comes Rabbi Yehuda and says, we're not gozer erusin atu nisuin, number one, because there's no connection between them. And number two is, we're not gozer arusot atu nisuot. He's not gozer in either direction, Rabbi Yehuda, but he requires havchana. Still requires havchana, which is you need a 90-day waiting period for the nisuot, that they have to wait 90 days because we want to do havchana. Then you have Rabbi Yossi, who says everything is okay, including havchana. We don't wait 90 days at all. So that means everybody can get married. Not only can the Arusot have Nisuin, even the Nisuot can have Nisuin. And everybody can get married within that 90-day period. So that's one answer. So Gemara says either, Ibai Yedema Leitle. So some explain it this way, like we just said, which is Rabbi Yossi doesn't have Havchana. Vibai Yedema Lola Mitle. Some say that he does have it. That he does have Havchana. Now, if that's the case, then you have to amend the statement of Rabbi Yossi to fit now, which is, Ve'ema. This is what you should say, Rabbi Yossi said, Omer, kol arusot girushot inasu. Any arusa who went through girushin, she can get married. Implying that an almanah cannot have nisuin. Why not? Why can't an almanah have nisuin? The assumption being is that she has the problem of avelut. Since she has the problem of avelut, she can't get married. But a grusha who doesn't have the avelut problem, then she can inasu, she can get married. Mar says, Iochi and Rabbi Yehuda. Now you just made him into Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says the same thing. Rabbi Yehuda, as Rashi says over here, everybody agrees by Nisuin that is considered to be a Sudat Simchahi. And therefore you have to wait for Nisuin until the Avelut is over. Everybody agrees with that point. So Rabbi Yehuda and now Rabbi Yossi are going to be the exact same thing, which is that they're going to allow for Erusin in all these cases, and they're going to allow for Nisuin, for Arusot, who came out of a Gerushin, came out of a divorce. If her husband passed away, then you have a problem because Nisuin has Simcha associated with it, and that would be a problem for the Avelut. So Mar says, we have a here, Ike Benayu, Nisua Li Ares. Someone who is fully married can have Erusin. Rabbi Yehuda Savar Nisua Muter Li Ares. Rabbi Yossi Savar Nisua Asura Li Ares. This is like some of the other opinions that we had in the Mishnah before. We explained the Mishnah according to this view of Rabbi Yossi, which is here Rabbi Yossi disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda and says that all the Nisuot, when we say they are Mutar, they are Reis, that's only Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Yossi is going to disagree and say that if she was Nisua, she cannot become an Arusa. No Nisuot are allowed to become the Reis. Mar says, V'sava Rabbi Yossi Nisua Asura Li Ares. Does Rabbi Yossi really think that if she was fully married, she can now not become engaged afterwards? V'atanyo, you have a bright Rabbi Yossi Omer, kol anashim yitarsu chutz min almana. Every woman can become engaged except for an almana, mipnei ha'ibul. By the way, it's the same line as our Mishnah. V'kama ibul shela, how long does the avilut last? 30 yom, 30 days. It's not apparent. So avilut only lasts for 30 days. V'kulan lo yinasu ad she'elehem gimel chodoshim. None of them can get married until the 3 months are up. That's again for Havchana, right? That's the Havchana problem of Gimel Chodoshim. But what you see from here is that Nisuot have to wait the 3 months, so there's definitely Havchana. Arusot are allowed to get married and have Nisuin. Nisuot can have Erusin because Erusin is not problematic, with the exception of an Almana who has a problem of Avelut. The Gemara says, wait a minute. So, hi, my Kushya. Please tell me what the problem is from the Braita. If you say because the language of the Braita is that all women can become engaged, wait, how is this any different? It's the exact same Lashon we have in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we were willing to amend the statement of Rabbi Yossi to read differently. We already just changed around Rabbi Yossi's statement from saying, kol hanashim yitarsu, and we said before, now we're going to read it that, kol arusot grushot inasu. So we changed the Lashon in the Mishnah. Now you bring a Braita. You're afraid to change the Braita? You're not afraid to change a Mishnah. Now is any afraid to change a Braita? Dukim ne barusot grushot inasu. Achanami kol arusot grushot inasu. We'll say the same thing here. You're going to amend the statement of Rabbi Yossi to match what we want over here, just like we did it in the Mishnah. So elami seifa diktani vikulan lo inasu acheilehem gimel chodoshim. So because we're going to be mdayek out of the seifa, which is all of them cannot get fully married until they have the 90-day or the 3-month window pass. In Zivuyehu Delo, that getting married, full marriage, consummation of the marriage can't happen. Ha, it's Rusei Shapir Dami. But that means the Erusin is allowed. The deal got there is that Erusin would be allowed for those women. And now you have a problem because we just said here that Rabbi Yossi, the nafkamina between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda's position is exactly this. That Nisuot cannot become Arusot. They can't have Erusin. Rabbi Yehuda says, yes, Nisuot can have Erusin. Rabbi Yossi says, Nisuot cannot have Erusin. Now you have a braita implying that Rabbi Yossi believes that Nisuot just can't get married, but they can have Erusin. So, Amarava Taritz Ve'ema Hachi. Let's amend Rabbi Yossi to say this. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kol Arusot, Grushot, Inasu. All Arusot that are divorced, they can get fully married. Chutz Mi'ena Omana Mi'pnei Ha'ibul. The exception of a widow because of the Ibul. B'kama Ibul Shela. How long does the Avelut last? 30 yom, 30 days. V'nisuot lo yitarsu. Nisuot should not become engaged ad she'elahem shlosha chodoshim. Until they have 90 days or 3 months that elapse. So again, we're amending the Braita to avoid that problem and to take away the deal from Rabbi Yossi. Here you have this machlok between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda in this one point, whether the Nisuot can have Erusin afterwards. Mar says, wait a minute. V'almana min Erusin mit le'ibol? You're talking about Avelut over here. Since when does an Arusa have a din of Avelut? That's only true by a Nisua. Nisua has a din of Avelut. An Arusa doesn't have a din of Avelut. V'atani Rabbi Chiya ba'ami. Ishto Arusa, he's married to a woman who's an Arusa, lo onein ve'lo mitameila. He does not classify as an onein for her, meaning that he's not a surin kodoshim or to eat kodoshim as an onein. Ve'lo mitameila. And he doesn't have to become tamei for her. Now, lo mitamei la could be talking about a case of a kohen. And by the case of a Kohen, he is not permitted to become Tamei, whereas by the other seven relatives of a Kohen, including the wife, he is obligated to become Tamei. As the Rambam says, we're metameihim abal korcho. But over here, since she's only an Arusa, he cannot become Tamei for her. Or we'll see in the latter half of the Mishnah, a Braita, that maybe there's another way to interpret that. V'chein he. And she, lo onenet, she doesn't get the classification of an onenet, so she would not be a surah in kodoshim. Ve'lo mitamei lo. And she cannot become Tamei for him. Now, Rashi here, back earlier on the Masechta on Daf Chof Tet, Rashi says, lav davka. This doesn't mean literally that she's not allowed to. It just means that she's not obligated to become a Tmei'a. And that's how Rashi interprets over here. Klomar eina mitzuva litasegbo. She doesn't have to deal with him. She doesn't have to deal with the mate in this case. As opposed to if they were a husband and wife relationship, there would be an obligation for her to take care of the mate. Rashi does not say it here, but back on Chof Tet, Amabed brings another interpretation, which is that it's going into the regel. And since it's going into the regel over there, there's an obligation for every Yisrael to become Tohor going into the regel. And that's what it means over here. V'lo mitamela, she's not allowed to become Tamei for him because she's entering into the regel. And she needs to be Tehora. Therefore, it's not optional for her. It's actually, it's Sivui that she doesn't become Tamei. So in this case, it could be talking about a Yisrael or Yisraelite because a Kohenet, a woman Kohen, has no obligations vis-a-vis Tuma. She doesn't have an Yisrael to become Tamei. Whereas a Kohen does have an Yisrael to become Tamei. So in the Reisho, we explain it as a Kohen. But in Sefer, you have to explain it even with the Israelite. If that's true, you can also explain the Reisho with the Yisrael. The way the Rashi gives this interpretation that we're talking about going into the Regel. And since going into the Regel, there's an obligation to be Tohor. Therefore, Yisrael cannot become Tamei in this case. Just like Israelite or a Kohenet would not become Tmeya. Meita enu Yosha. If she passes away, he does not inherit her. Meitu. Govak tubada. When he dies, she has a right to collect on her ktuba. We mentioned this back on Chavtet as well. That's not necessarily the case unless it's specifically written into the ktuba that she has rights to the ktuba from the Erusin, not just from the time of Nesuin. Ela tanaehi. The Gemara says, okay, then we have to suggest here that there's actually a machloket tanaim in order to get Rabbi Yossi out of this opinion, which is with regards to Tisha B'Av. The Kal V'Chomer from Tisha B'Av was problematic for Rabbi Yossi's position with regards to Erusin and the Almanah. Because we said by Tisha B'Av, where business transactions were problematic, we said there it's Mutar L'Ares. Over here, where business transactions are allowed, certainly Erusin should be allowed. So now the Gemara is going to say that that statement backed by Tisha B'Av, by Mishnech L'Zav Mati M'Simcha, is actually subject to a Machloket Tanaim. And Rabbi Yossi will not subscribe to that opinion. If he doesn't subscribe to that opinion, he doesn't have the Kal V'Chomer to undermine his position, which is Tanya. From Chodesh Chodesh until Tisha B'Av, the people diminish their transactions, interactions. That has to deal with business. To build and to plant. And Erusin and Nisuin. Here you go. Erusin here was just restricted from Rosh Chodesh. Shabbat Shechal Tisha B'Av B'Tucha Asur L'Saper L'Chabes. Once you reach the week in which Tisha B'Av falls out, then you add on to that the additional restrictions of haircutting and laundering. Ve'yeshomrim Kol HaChodesh. And there's somebody who thinks that this applies to the entire month. Again, we don't pass one like that day out, that it would extend beyond Tisha B'Av to the remainder of the month. But you see over there, there's an opinion that says Erusin is restricted even from Rosh Chodesh. Now you have to note in all these cases here, the clear distinction between Erusin and Nisuin, which Rashi notes here numerous times, is that Erusin is not involved in Simcha. There's no Simcha involved with Erusin. That is not true. By Nisuin, there is a Simcha involved. And that's why in these cases of Avilut, we would assume that Erusin is not problematic with Avilut because there's no inherent Simcha involved with it. Nisuin, on the other hand, everybody would agree, even Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, who Rabbi Yossi's argument would have to agree by Nisuin, by an almanah, that would not be permitted because Nisuin is actually a dinan simcha. So Nisuin would not be permitted. Erusin, on the other hand, would be permitted, according to Rabbi Yehuda, because Erusin is not a dinan simcha. Now we have Rabbi Yossi come along and say, Erusin is also restricted because he holds like the day by Tisha B'Av, which from Mishnech Nazav, Mamati, and Simcha, that Erusin are restricted there. So too over here, Erusin are restricted. So now we're going back to Rabbi Yossi's original statement, the literal translation of the words in the Mishnah, that is, Kol Anisuot itarsu chutz min almana. All those that were fully married can have an engagement afterwards, with the exception of an almana. I wanted to know, how could you aser erusin? Erusin is not a din in simcha, and we have a proof from that from the restrictions by Tisha B'Av that their erusin is allowed. The Gemara says that's a machloket tanaim. We have another Tana who says erusin is not allowed, and therefore there is a problem with erusin. Now, matkiv la Rav Ashi, mimaydi la'areis mamash. How do you know that when we brought this bright over here and suggested that it is a machloket tanaim, that this Tana here believes that erusin is problematic? Because in the Mishnah, if you look before that we quoted, there the Mishnah has two types of erusin. It has erusin, which is the actual halachic engagement. And then there's sudat erusin. There's the meal to celebrate the erusin. With regards to the meal to celebrate the erusin, there we said it was problematic. That's too much simcha. That's not allowed. But the erusin itself was permitted. In the Braita here, we only mentioned the erusin once. How do you know that when we talk about the erusin here, it really literally means the engagement, the halachic engagement that's restricted? Maybe over here it means that this sudat erusin is restricted. And that's what Rav Ashi says. Mimai de la reis mamash. The problem here is only a sudat erusin, but erusin itself would be mutar, and then now you do not have a machloket tanaim with regards to erusin by Tisha B'Av. If that's the case, your kal v'chomer comes back into play. How come by Tisha B'Av we allow erusin, and over here we do not allow erusin? Mar says, ihochi milisa. What's over here? If you say milisa, what are you going to say in the Mishnah over here? How are you going to explain the Braita? The Braita mentions Erusin and Nisuin. What are you going to say now? Oh, now you interpret Erusin to mean that it is a meal for the Erusin. You're going to say the same thing by Nisuin, that it's a meal for the Nisuin. Halisa Shabradami. That means, oh, that she could get married. She just could have a Suda separated, but she can't get married. Or it says, okay, Ashto. How can you compare these two? Bishlama nisuin below suda yika simcha. Nisuin without a suda, there's inherent simcha with it. Erusin below suda yika simcha. Erusin without the suda, there's no simcha involved with it. So Rashi says there's no simcha, that it's just mitzvah ka'ovid. He's doing a mitzvah. That Rashi is very important for something that we'll see when we get to the Gemara in Kiddushin, as to whether there actually is a mitzvah of Kiddushin. From here, Rashi seems to say that Erusin is a mitzvah ka'ovid, even though it's not clear, according to the Rishonim, whether there is a mitzvah of Kiddushin, or Kiddushin is just a hechi timtze to get to the mitzvah of pru or go. But Rashi over here says erusin do not involve simcha. They're simply a mitzvah kavod, as opposed to nisuin, which inherently have simcha. So Rav Ashi, who now suggested that we'll reinterpret that brightly to say that erusin means sudat erusin. If you do that, you have to say nisuin means sudat erusin, implying that both erusin and nisuin are allowed. That's not the case. Erusin, mitzvah ka'ovid, like Rashi says, and there's no simcha involved. So that type of diuk is fine. But if you say only a sudat nisuin is restricted, but nisuin itself is mudar, there's no way that is the case, because nisuin involves simcha inherently. And therefore, that would not be permissible. So now, elam Rav Ashi. So now Rav Ashi has to back away from that explanation of the Braita. But by doing backing away from that explanation of the Braita, we now leave it open that it is a machloket tanaim. It's machloket tanaim. Rabbi Yossi can just subscribe to the opinion by Tisha B'Av that erusin is restricted during that period of time, and therefore there's no kal v'chomer to undermine his position over here, that for a nisua almana, that she would be restricted in erusin, because it's similar to Tisha B'Av now, not different than Tisha B'Av. But Elam Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi is not willing to accept that, because we hold that Mishnah. That Mishnah regarding Tisha B'Av is considered to be a lacha psuka, and therefore, first of all, he wants to reinterpret the Braita to match it. And now when he can't get the Braita to match it, he's now going to try to do something else to show you that Rabbi Yossi's opinion can be premised even on the opinion that says that erusin is mutar the gabe Tisha B'Av. And the problem is the kal v'chomer that Rav Chisda brought at the beginning of our Gemara over here, or the one that was later modified by Rova, that kal v'chomer doesn't work, because the avelut of Tisha B'Av is different than the avelut for a relative that passes away, which is Elmar Vashi, Shani Avelut Chadasha, Avelut Yishana. It's the difference between avelut that is raw and fresh versus an avelut that's been going on for many years. Tisha B'Av is an avelut Yishana. The Mikdash was destroyed close to 2,000 years ago, therefore it's called avelut Yishana. It's something that has less raw emotion involved with it. It's something that we actually have to build up our emotions about in order to feel and be sensitized to that loss of the Mikdash. So over there, that's why Yerusin is permitted. But by Vilut Chadasha, which is raw motion, which is the passing of the individual, over there, maybe we're more machmir, and since we're more machmir, therefore, we're going to say that Asur Yerusin. Then the Gemara says, Vishani Avilut Rabim, Avilut Yachid. And there's a difference between Avilut of the public as a whole, which is Tisha B'Av, versus Avilut Yachid, the Avilut of the individual. Rashi says that they're saying the same thing. That this distinction that is being drawn is the same thing. It's saying that we have to be Mekyo by Tisha B'Av for two reasons. One is that it's Avelut Yishana. And number two is that it's Avelut Dirabim. Since it's Avelut Dirabim, Hilka Kilo. Therefore, it's more Mekyo. So Rashi sees both of these saying the same thing, which is Tisha B'Av or Shechabot Tisha B'Av or Rosh Chodesh is more Kal because it's both Avelut Yishana and Avelut Dirabim, not Avelut Yachid. On the other hand, Tosafot already takes issue with this. Tosafot asks on this. The Ramban. Everybody challenges Rashi on this and says that, first of all, why do you have to separate the two statements? Put them all together. That's one. Number two is, there are things by Tisha B'Av that were more machmir. We just said before, with regards to business transactions, mili savli tain. By Vilut Yachid, we are mekyo, and by Tisha B'Av, we are more machmir. Therefore, Tosafot, the Ramban, and others suggest that the first statement is explaining why Avelut Yachid is more chamur, which is that Avelut Chadasha is more chamur than Avelut Yishana, which is that with regards to Erusin. Erusin we permit by Avelut Yishana, by that time of Tisha B'Av, versus Avelut Chadasha, by an Avelut here, a newer, fresher Avelut, there we will not permit Erusin. Then the second statement comes to explain why we're more machmir by certain instances by Tisha B'Av that we don't have by Avelut, which is Avelut Rabim. Since Tisha B'Av is an Avelut Rabim, therefore we're more machmir there with certain things versus Avelut Yachid. And that's with regards to Kibbutz, as Tosafot says, we're more machmir the Gabe Kibbutz, and Milisav Litein and business transactions. Because by a Yachid, if a Yachid does a little business here, or does something small or quick, like Erusin, that's not going to undermine his whole Avelut. On the other hand, if the public at large is permitted to do work, or the public at large is allowed to do kibbutz, then there will be no day of Avelut, or there will be no days of Avelut. Therefore, by Tisha B'Av, they restricted these items of kibbutz during the Shavua Shechalbo Tisha B'Av, and they restricted Lisav Litein to have business transactions and to be Ma'it Ve'esek starting from Rosh Chodesh, because that's Avelut Rabim. When it comes to the Rabim, we can't just give a bona fide heter for everybody to do this, otherwise it won't be any day of Avelut. What makes it a different day is when everybody desists from these activities, and that's why we have to do it. By Yachid, Tosfot says, this won't undermine it, because by Yachid, first of all, he will only do it for a very short duration, and number two is, it's not bifarhesya, it's not something that is public. When the public at large is doing something, if everybody's laundering, then it's a public issue that everybody's laundering. When a Yachid does his laundry, he can do it quietly or privately where people won't note that. So you have these two distinctions according to the Rishonim, which is that, number one, Avelut Yachid has Chumrot because of the fact that it's Avelut Chadasha. And then Avelut Yachid has certain Kulot vis-a-vis or Chumrot that are associated with Tisha B'Av, which is because it is Avelut Rabim. The reason why that is either Bifarhesya, as Tosafot explains over here, or Ramban suggests a little bit along a different line of thinking, which is that since it's an Avelut Yishana, people are going to be mekil. So the Chachamim had to impose certain chumrot on the Avelut Yishana in order to give it more strength or tokef. And so they added on things like kibbutz and masava matan in order to engage the public and have them take seriously the isurim or the Avelut that is associated with Tisha B'Av. And then he says the distinction by Erusin is that by Yachid, if he allow him to do Erusin, then he'll go ahead and make a suda or he'll go and have it in Nusuin, because he's a private individual. But if the public at large, when it's by Tisha B'Av and everybody's by Avelut, if a person has Erusin, nobody's going to allow them to go ahead and make a Suda, or nobody's going to allow them to go ahead and have an Nisuin, because everybody's involved, and therefore other people will remind them of the Isur, the restriction over there. Miri brings an interesting explanation of the difference there, that they restricted Kibbutz because they thought the Gezerah would take hold in terms of Avelut, but with regards to Erusin, they thought people would not listen, and since they thought people wouldn't listen, they didn't put it to an effect. By an individual, they can restrict Erusin, but by the public at large to restrict Erusin, they didn't feel that the public would accept that type of Zera, and therefore they were not Gozer, even though it should have been. Now, in defense of Rashi, those are those that say that Avelut Rabim is actually also a kula, like Rashi says, because when everybody's Bavelut, then everybody's able to console each other. In a sense, misery loves company, and that's why it's more kal, because of the fact that everybody's together in this predicament. Versus Avelut Yachid, where it's only the individual there, then they have this certain amount of existential loneliness from the loss that was created over here, and that even though people are menachem, it doesn't feel the same because they're not in the same moment of experience. And by doing that, you can defend Rashi's position that both of these are statements of kulot with regards to the Avilut Vaitisha Ba'av. Tosavo does note here from what we're bringing here that it's only during period from Mashchodesh that we permit Erusin. But by Shavua Shechalbo Tisha B'Av, it would imply that Erusin is problematic during that Shavua Shechalbo Tisha B'Av. But then Tosavo brings what we're all familiar with, that Matzab and Gilat Starim, even on Tisha B'Av itself, someone can have Erusin because Shema Yikadmenu Acher Birachamim. That's really the reason given in the Gemara in Moed Katan as to why Erusin is permitted. In the instance of Rosh Chodesh, from the time of Rosh Chodesh, or Shavua Shechalbo, or even on Tisha B'Av itself, is because the problem of Shemi Kadmenu Acher. There the Gemara has Rishonim argue about what does it mean, Shemi Kadmenu Acher B'Tfilah, what can Tfilah change, and if Shiduchim, or Hashem has a Basher, how does Tfilah work? We discussed that more extensively in Moed Katan. But because of that, Shemi Kadmenu Acher is why we permit Erusin even through Shavua Shechalbo, and even on Tisha B'Av itself. Tosfot here, there's a large Tosfot discussing the exceptions to the rule with regards to Avelut, when we allow an individual to get married. And when we allow them to get married, does that include Nisuin or only Erusin? First of all, the Gemara gives exceptions for a man who has yet to be Mekayim Puriyah or Rivyah. That there we have exceptions to the rule that he's allowed to get married before the period of Avelut is up. In addition, if a man has very young children and he needs a woman to take care of them, that he can get married faster. So here, Tosafot discusses whether that's during the Shiva period, only after the Shiva period, during the Shloshim period. And if it is permissible during the Shloshim period, does that mean that she is also allowed to consummate the marriage during that 30-day period? Or is only Erusin that's allowed during the 30-day period, and the Nisuin has to be done after the 30-day period? And Tosafot discusses, this might even apply to someone who's an Avel on his parents, that mean these dispensations that we allow for the remarriage might apply even if he's an Avel for his parents, which would include the full Shana instead of just the 30-day period, that he would be allowed to have Nisuin afterwards. Tosafot, in the end, leans heavily in the favor of saying that Erusin can be at any time if it's necessary, that Nisuin can actually even take place within the 30-day window of Avelut, and Bi'ila will have to wait until after the 30-day period, even though he says there's some evidence that even Nisuin and Bi'ila could be born at the 30 days, he still lays out, based on the different opinions and different Gemarot, that that's probably the setup that Erusin is allowed right away because of the necessity to lock up the situation. Nisuin will be permitted in these exceptional cases, even during the 30 days of Avilut, but he won't be able to consummate the marriage with Bia until after the 30-day window has elapsed. Okay, we'll stop over here by the Mishnah at the bottom of Mem Gimel Amud Bet.